This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of June 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll talk more about the RFS, ethanol, U.S. EPA, and Darrell Good's take on the whole matter. And we'll discuss today, too, the weather forecast. We'll be joined by the guys at Earth Risk Technology in Chicago, Illinois. Oh, and the folks at the Anderson specific facility right here in Champaign County will help us take a look at the cash grain market as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, the numbers finished up like this for the day. July corn futures were up 4 3/4 at $3.65 1/4. Settlement price for the September at $3.72 3/4, up 5 1/4. And December corn 5.5 cents higher per bushel at $3.83 1/2. March of next year up 5 1/4, $3.94 1/4. July soybeans at 6 1/2 cents higher, $9.44 1/4. The settlement price August $9.29 1/4, up 4 3/4. And September at $9.20 1/2. 4.5 higher. November beans $9.20 1/4 cents, up 6 cents for the day. January futures of next year at $9.27 1/2, up 5 3/4, and the March up 5 3/4 as well. $9.32 the settlement price there. Bean meal at $3.09.50, up $4.60. Bean oil finished 68 cents lower at $34.10. Chicago soft red winter wheat at $5.28 finished 11 cents higher. September up 12.5 at $5.34. The hard red July Kansas City at 9 1/4. Quarter higher at $5.44 1/2 on its final trade. Livestock futures up $1.15 in the feeder cattle at $223 1/2. June live cattle 77 1/2 cents higher. They finished at $153.60. And lean hogs for the day were down 17 1/2 cents on their last trade at $81.50. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online anytime you'd like. Our address is WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations, and in the case of Commodity Week, before it ever airs. It's at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
In the outside markets, crude oil futures for the day trading 96 cents lower per gallon at $58.17. Ethanol futures at $1.55 are 0.4 cents higher. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, is $2.06 cents. That's 2 4/10 cents lower. And heating oil or diesel fuel is $1.85 3/10 on its last trade, down 1 6/10. Natural gas for the day up 11 7/10, sits at $2.70 7/10. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 26 points lower at this hour at 17,815. The U.S. dollar is down 1.05 at 96.36, that is. And the gold futures are up about $5 at the end of the day, $1,173 in their last trade. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Isolated showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will start in just a bit. Mostly sunny, a high of 83. Otherwise, west winds at 14 miles an hour, gusting to 23. Chance of precipitation, if we do get it, at 20%, so not very high for the afternoon. A few isolated showers and thunderstorms before 10 this evening as well. Partly cloudy and a low of 63 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny skies and 86. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy and 66. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny and 89 degrees. Wednesday night, cloudy and 67. And by the time we get to Thursday, again, sunny skies. It'll be a high of 88 degrees. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's a Monday afternoon, the 8th day of June. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Kurt Kimmel, as usual. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to talk about the marketplace and the trade for the day. Thanks much for being with us today. Anything exciting happen in Chicago?
Well, you're wanting the market to go up. It did go up a little bit today. You know, corn up 4 to 5, beans up 6, wheat up 11. Wheat seems to be like an old pork belly contract, straight up, straight down, just not wanting to stay in one place very long and through here. And when you sort of step back and take a look at the big picture, I think the trade's kind of dialed into that, not wanting to or enthused about a big move up or a big move down. And what I mean by that, we talked a little bit this morning about options and option volatility, how the volatility is so low. And this time of year, usually option volatility goes up because you expect big moves up or big moves down according to the weather forecast. But I think the trade's kind of geared that there's going to be some fairly good producer selling on rallies, and there's going to be some fairly good end user buying on breaks. So as we move forward and through here, if we don't see a weather event that's extremely bullish or extremely bearish, we might just kind of remain in a up-down type of marketplace here over time. Of course, step one is Wednesday's report, then step two would naturally be the stocks and acreage port here at the end of the month, Todd.
You have mentioned option volatility a couple of times. When you talk to producers about options, what do you mean by volatility for options? And is there a way that they're able to take advantage of low volatility in that marketplace?
Volatility is basically just kind of how it sounds. With the markets volatile, you have big ups, big downs. The sellers want a little bit more premium because there's more risk to it. As we move into Wednesday's report, you look at the volatility. Volatility will pick up just a tick or two ahead of the report because we don't know whether the report's going to be bullish or bearish. And so for those selling options, you know, they want a little cushion to work with to give them some room. It's probably about the best way to explain it. As we go through the growing season, with the weather forecast, typically there's the volatility starts to pick up according to the forecast and makes options more expensive. But when there's low volatility, they have the tendency to be a little bit cheaper. Now, that's not 100% because there's time value, and there's delta and theta and gamma, and there's other things that affect the price of an option. But historic-wise, one general observation has been missed is that, you know, the value of these options, the volatility is relatively low for this time of year.
You have had an opportunity throughout the day to talk to your clientele base. I know that's across the Midwest. Can you explain how much rainfall and precipitation they have received and whether they think they're in good or bad shape and what conditions are like in different parts of the growing areas?
Oh, it varies extremely from location to location. Texas seems to be drying out for the most part. They're mudding out the wheat, a lot of down wheat, some sprout concerns and so forth. But for the most part, we're seeing some progress there. As you move up through Missouri, it seems that area continues just to struggle all around. There's continuing to see one system after another, whether it comes from the southwest or northwest, it passes through Missouri for some reason, and those guys continue to struggle. Ohio River valleys, they had a dry pattern there for a while. It seems we saw some headway in that area. A lot of guys, ran 24/7 and was able to get a good chunk of the crop in, and so we'll see if the weather cooperates. Southern Illinois continues to fight the wet. The big concern is getting the wheat out and trying to get the double crop beans in, and that's going to be a struggle here, you know, as we move forward. Here locally, just depends, you know, whether or not you've got ground that's high or low. You know, naturally, the lower ground, river bottom ground, is pretty well going to be in jeopardy here now with the big rains we've seen. So, you know, it's just a real mixed bag. When you look at the big picture, though, I think it's going to hinge on, you know, the next week or two, whether or not we continue to see this heavy moisture pattern across the Midwest.
And before I let you go, can you go through the WASDE numbers for me, expectations for ending stocks, old and new crop, and what your thoughts are?
On the corn, old crop corn, last month the ending stocks was 1851. We feel that could probably be bumped up 50 million bushels up to about 1.9 billion bushel carry out. You know, just feels that there's plenty of older stocks around that could, and demand's a little slow, especially on corn exports. So we look for that number to be slightly higher. On new crop corn, last month it was 1746. We feel that could be up another 50 to 100 million. Bushel, some that trades up to 2 billion. I don't think will quite be that high, but what I think and what the numbers are sometimes two different things, but we'll see how those unfold. Wheat-wise, just non-eventful. Old crop wheat, you know, could be up down 10 million bushels on the bottom line. The new crop, same thing. Can't see a whole lot of change there. If there's going to be any change, probably it'd be the world wheat numbers. Then lastly, of course, the bean estimate. It kind of feels like the old crop number could sort of hang in there unchanged at down 10 to 15 million bushels. Whereas the new crop estimate, last month we saw 500 million bushel. Ideas are that could maybe be down to closer to 400 million. But the bottom line in all these numbers are there's ample supplies right now, not only domestically, but worldwide. So it's going to have to take a drawdown in the supply numbers somewhere to get these ending stocks to be bullish.
It's always been good to talk to you. We'll talk with you again next Monday.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This week, University of Illinois Ag economist Darrell Good has explored just how corn demand could be affected by U.S. EPA's proposed renewable fuel standard. Since the fall of 2005, the number of bushels of corn used by the ethanol industry has jumped sharply. Back then, it was about 2 billion bushels. It topped out at around 5 billion bushels with the 2011 corn harvest, and this year, it's on track to hit 5.2 billion. This demand is driven almost exclusively by ethanol and not by the co-products. University of Illinois Ag Economist Darrell Good says going forward, there are a few different directions the industry might take, depending on a series of factors. Those factors include the EPA's annual renewable fuel standards and the methods for implementing those standards, the magnitude of domestic motor fuel consumption, the economics of ethanol blending, the quantity of domestic ethanol produced from feedstocks other than corn, and the magnitude of ethanol imports and exports. Cutting to the chase, here's how Good sees U.S. EPA's proposal.
At this juncture, it appears that domestic consumption of conventional ethanol in 2015 and 16 will likely not decline from the level consumed in 2014 if domestic gasoline consumption remains robust. Additionally, export demand for ethanol is expected to remain at or above the 850 million gallons of 2014. As a result, the demand for corn for ethanol production appears to be on very solid footing for the next 18 months. While growth may be limited, a setback is certainly not expected.
The RFS for 2014 is obviously being proposed after the fact and reflects production, consumption, and trade conditions that actually unfolded in 2014, writes Darrell Good on the FarmDoc Daily website in support of his view. He says the EPA estimates that 13.43 billion gallons of ethanol were used domestically in 2014. The proposed RFS for conventional ethanol was set at 13.25 billion gallons. For 2015, the EPA has proposed a conventional ethanol mandate of 13.4 billion gallons. That's only 146 million gallons higher than the actual consumption in 2014. The modest increase reflects expectations that total gasoline consumption will increase by about 1.4%, but the ethanol inclusion rate will decline from 9.84% in 2014 to 9.66% in 2015, so that the effective blend wall declines from 13.43 billion gallons to 13.336 billion gallons. If cellulosic and other advanced ethanol consumption reaches 282 million gallons, the effective blend wall would then limit consumption of conventional ethanol to only 13.08 billion gallons. The difference between the proposed standard of 13.4 billion gallons and the effective blend wall for conventional ethanol of 322 million gallons would represent a gap that would have to be met by a combination of consumption of gasoline with higher ethanol blends, say E15 or E85, consumption of additional advanced biofuels, biodiesel, and the use of some RIN stocks. For 2016, the EPA projects the effective blend wall at 13.46 billion gallons. If consumption of cellulosic or other advanced ethanol reaches 406 million gallons, the effective blend wall would limit consumption of conventional ethanol to about 13.054 billion gallons, and the difference between the proposed standard of 14 billion gallons and the effective blend wall for conventional ethanol would leave a gap of around a million gallons to be met with higher ethanol blends, advanced biofuels, or RIN stocks. The EPA projections for 2015 and 16 suggest that increases in domestic consumption of conventional ethanol above the 2014 level will depend on the ability of higher ethanol blends to compete with alternatives for meeting the gap between the mandated levels of consumption and the lower effective 10% blend wall for conventional ethanol. You know, the price of hogs is on the rebound, and it appears to be the economic remnants of a widespread disease outbreak in 2014. The pork industry continues to adjust from the supply shock created by the PED virus last year. Live hog prices peaked in the summer of 2014 as porcine epidemic virus losses mounted and then fell into the late winter of this season. Looking back, it seems that prices overshot on the high side due to PED, thinks Purdue University ag economist Chris Hurt, and then undershot early this year as market supplies were restored. He says the third phase of this cycle now seems to be the recent recovery in prices, up from the $45 lows made in March.
Now they've recovered from that 45 back into the low 60s. Those low prices back in March were clearly related to a 14% higher production for that month compared to year previous levels, and of course market concerns that pork supplies were going to remain higher by 10% or more into the spring.
Well, the recent recovery in hog prices apparently is related to the fact supplies have not been that high. April pork production was up 8%. May was up 6%. Both are in alignment with the last inventory count from USDA. If those inventory counts continue to hold, then second quarter pork production will be up by 6% and third quarter up by 7%. And the final quarter of the year up only 4%, says Chris Hurt. He says not only are fewer hogs coming to the market, but they weigh less, too.
And I would guess we may average near 1% lower weights for most of the rest of this year.
Fewer hogs at lower weights are causing a mid-year bump in prices. Live hog prices in the first quarter of the year were $48.47, according to USDA. Prices are expected to average near $58 in the second and third quarters. A Hurt thinks it will drop to about $51 in the final quarter of the year and then decline to the high $40 level for the first quarter of 2016. These numbers mean hog producers will make money this year, but lose money starting in 2016 unless the price of corn stays on the bottom end of its trading range. The next important benchmark for the pork industry is USDA's June Hogs and Pigs report, due out the 26th. It will show how the industry has grown or contracted since March.
Producers reported back in the last report, the March Hogs and Pigs report, that they intended to reduce this summer's farrowings by about 2%. Now, that was a little bit of a surprise given what has generally been a very profitable industry since mid-2013. If farrowing should actually expand rather than be down 2%, this clearly would increase pork production early next year, and that would keep a bearish cast over the industry, at least starting in 2016.
If you'd like to learn more from Chris Hurt about the livestock sector, in particular the pork industry, you can read his thoughts on the Farm Doc Daily website. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, let's turn our attention on this Monday afternoon now to what's been happening in the cash grain market. Amy Sage is on the phone line from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Hi, Amy. Thanks for being with us. We've been talking a little bit about the rainfall all day long. Where you live, I guess that's in the Royal area. How much rain did you get?
We got about 5.5 inches, actually. So we had about two rounds that came through pretty hard. So, but I did hear 8 to 8.5 in Danville, so I think they were the lucky winners. But watching the radar and everything last night, it did look like Douglas County was getting blasted. But actually, most people I've talked to from Douglas County today had 2 inches or less. So that's good for them.
Yeah, and I had two and six tenths at my home in Muhammad, although 8 tenths of that, and I have a new gauge, so I'm really only just guessing because I didn't run outside. It all came in about that first 8 tenths came in less than 15 minutes. It was unbelievable how hard it rained. It really just poured, and it'll be bad on crops. I suppose if you get on the Twitter feed, you'll see all kinds of ponding every place. But that's limited, and you have to deal with everything across the whole of the Midwest. What are you hearing outside of the primary areas that got nailed last night? Anything?
A lot of areas less than 2 inches, like you said, though, came down very quickly. But all in all, that's probably going to be beneficial for those people.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how fast things drain off, and hopefully that won't hurt them too bad. But like you say, the spots that really got hammered probably, take some of that topside potential off, but hopefully won't be too damaging. We'll see what happens as far as the 10% roughly of beans that haven't been planted yet, if those are going to be able to get in the ground at this point.
And I bet you're slow today that the guys are doing a lot more spade work than they are moving grain.
Yes, yeah, not a big movement day for grain into the Andersons. Probably some better days to haul, and like you say, just getting a lot of reports from the countryside on rain totals and ponding and that.
Yeah. So. And what are your bids for the day, by the way?
Yes, cash corn, $3.57, $3.57. Fall is $3.63. Cash soybeans $9.49. Fall beans $9 even. And cash wheat, along with July, both at $5.18.
Hey, thank you so much. I know you're looking forward to WASD on Wednesday of this week, and we'll get back in touch with you guys a bit later. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Amy Sage. She's with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The weather forecast in just 2 minutes.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's National Donut Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1848, Franklin Hiram King was born. An American agricultural scientist, he was the inventor of the cylindrical tower silo. He also invented a gravity system of ventilation for dairy barns that was widely used until electric-powered blowers became commonly available. King was a giant in agriculture. He also studied soil physics, including water holding capacities, moisture requirements of plants, aeration, movement of water in soils, and soil fertility. He also conducted the first year-long study of power generated by farm windmills. In 1859, Walter Hunt died. Hunt invented the first safety pin in 1849. It was made out of a piece of brass wire about 8 inches long, coiled at the center and shielded at one end. In 1908, the UN National Conservation Commission was formed by President Theodore Roosevelt. The commission prepared the first inventory of the natural resources of the U.S., including water, forests, lands, and minerals. And in 1992, the UN Environmental Agency was formed and adopted a 300-page plan for achieving sustainable development in the 21st century. And that's this day in agricultural history.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. On this Monday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is the senior weather analyst at Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago. What a storm we had yesterday. Can you tell me about it just a bit, please?
Sure. With the very warm and humid conditions, high dew points here across actually much of the central and eastern U.S., the environment was ripe for very heavy rainfall with the upper-level disturbance that moved into the area. So we saw quite a bit of variability from a precip total standpoint, but central Illinois, especially in around the Danville and east central Illinois region, got hit the hardest. Another little pocket into south central Illinois also received some of the heaviest rainfall over the weekend. But when you look back overall the past 3 days, we saw widespread rains with totals in excess of an inch across a large chunk of Illinois, western Indiana, northeastern Missouri, and then some swaths across Iowa and Minnesota.
More good than bad for the crops, I would think, in that case.
Yeah, especially since this is kind of like the first dose here of heavy rainfall. But, you know, something that needs to be watched here going forward is the pattern looks active. And so we are going to see numerous rounds of rain coming up, not only this week, but into next week as well. And with the warm, muggy environment, higher dew points across the Midwest, the conditions will be favorable for more rounds of heavy rainfall and potentially some flash flooding too during the strongest of storms.
So the next 7 to 10 days will be pretty important for a crop that's off to a good start, relatively speaking, in large part of the Midwest, but maybe ticking back some of its potential over that time frame.
Yeah, and really the area of note in the Midwest was for any fields that still need soybeans planted, of which the southwestern Midwest is kind of the same, is the area with most in need here of these drier windows coming up to plant the remaining soybeans. And you have about a 3-day window this week, but with more active weather here continuing specifically in that zone later on this week, that window is pretty tight.
And so you're talking about Kansas, Missouri area, correct?
Exactly. And some sections of southwest Iowa, eastern Nebraska is in that zone as well. But Missouri into Kansas, yeah, has been the wettest zone here of late.
Anything else around the planet that you've been keeping an eye on?
Certainly, at least areas with increasing dryness concern at the present time. Well, number one on the list is portions of Europe, especially Eastern Europe, which is trended drier and now has trended hotter too, as ridging of high pressure continues to influence the pattern across not only Europe but into Western Russia. But it's really Eastern Europe, which is kind of the epicenter of the driest conditions here coming up. So that needs to be watched. We also have dryness across the Canadian prairies. And so that's with the newly planted crop there, that's another item that needs to be watched. And finally, Australia has trended drier in recent weeks with no sign of any significant improvement.
We thank you so much for taking your time with us.
You're welcome, Todd.
That is Mark Russo. He is with Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being with us. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.